Thanks for being here. Let me begin by saying how happy I am to be co-hosting this event with Bob. As I already mentioned earlier this morning, trade finance was identified as a major constraint already in 2007 during the first global trade review, and that was prior to the present crisis. Since then, the situation has gotten dire, and developing countries in particular are hit by this liquidity crunch as a result of the global crisis. And this program is a very tangible answer to this specific challenge faced by developing countries. By holding this ceremony today on the margins of the second WTO Global Trade Review, we wish to send a clear message that although we as WTO will not be contributing to the fund as such, because that's not in our mandate, we see ourselves as partners. And we also recognize the centrality of this trade finance issue to our ongoing efforts to keep trade open during this difficult period. Since April, progress towards disbursement by members of this fund is being made. We will try to make sure that by the time G20 leaders reconvene in Pittsburgh, they can take stock of the implementation of the commitments they took in London, and that this fund will be one of the various prescriptions of the G20 where we are on track. Let me, in concluding, again pay tribute to the leadership role of the World Bank Group, and note that putting together a fund of this magnitude within a short period of time is commendable. I'm also happy to see the ADB and Donald at the forefront of this initiative. Not surprisingly, insofar as Africa has been hit hardest by this crisis, and that we hope that this intervention will help Africa to restore predictability in African trade finance. And let me also, without quoting each of them, pay tribute to the many financial institutions who are teaming into this initiative, again at a time where so many developing countries need this liquidity. Bob, floor is yours.
I'm very pleased to be here with my good friend Pascal, who's offered such thoughtful leadership, not only on trade policy, but also, importantly, its connections to development. And I also am particularly pleased that we're able to launch this with Don Cabarrucco, who's really done a superb job with the African Development Bank and our partnership. But I also want to say a word of appreciation for all our partners and guests who are joining us for this launch of the Global Trade Liquidity Program. This program reflects four approaches to the way that the World Bank is doing business differently, and in doing so, trying to help our developing country clients to overcome this crisis. First, the GTLP is based on stronger partnerships with other multilateral organizations. Especially during a crisis, we need to have all hands on deck working together. And unfortunately, too often in the past, multilateral organizations failed to build on the synergies of cooperation. So today's launch reflects a problem-solving approach with partnerships with the WTO, the regional development banks, and the African Development Bank in particular. But we've also had discussions with some of the other regional development banks with their programs, and we hope to engage them too. What happened is that we could see early on that with the sharp global downturn that it threatened trade, jobs, and investment, not only because of the collapse in demand, but also because of the loss of credit and the increased counterparty risk that affected the business of trade finance. So we resolved to act in concert to reverse what we were concerned would be a downward spiral. Second, the Global Trade Liquidity Program reflects an important partnership with the private sector. There's not enough public capital around to get out of this economic hole, so we have to get private credit moving again. And a special feature of the Global Trade Liquidity Program is that for every 40 cents that is put up by IFC and our public sector counterparts, that the commercial bank partners will put up 60 cents. And moreover, we'll be able to execute the program by working through the network of 8 to 10 regional and global commercial banks that already have extensive trade finance presence in the developing countries. We'll connect them with the World Bank Group's network of trade finance partner banks so we can work through some 500 different banks in the developing world in some 70 countries. So I'm especially grateful to our friends at Standard Chartered Bank, Standard Bank, Citigroup, and Rabobank for their leadership, and we're very excited about the possibilities of having others join us soon, including Bladex and Commerce Bank. Third, the Global Trade Liquidity Partnership is a practical example of the World Bank Group's efforts to try to catalyze public sector action with both developed and developing countries. IFC provided $1 billion as our anchor investment, and as Donald mentioned, the African Development Bank has also been a cornerstone investor, but we're also very appreciative and grateful for the contributions for the governments of Canada and the Netherlands, UK's Department of International Development, as well as its CDC group, OPEC's Fund for International Development, the Saudi Fund for Development, Japan's Bank for International Cooperation, and some financing support we have from China's Ministry of Finance. And there's more countries that are expected to join us, and some of them are here today. Finally, the Global Trade Liquidity Partnership reflects the World Bank Group's spirit of innovation, led by our colleagues at IFC. When the crisis first hit, we already had in place a $1 billion fund to help guarantee trade finance with banks in developing countries. And we quickly expanded that to $3 billion of guarantees. And we had some pickup, but as you heard this morning, one of the things we were able to ascertain, because IFC is so close to the marketplace, was that the newest problem of trade finance was one of a lack of liquidity. So we had to get money flowing before you could get guarantees, and guarantees alone wouldn't assure that we could get trade finance. So working with our partners, we came up with this idea of a global trade liquidity program. We hope to build on this initial $2.5 billion investment to get, say, $4 to $5 billion. Then we can leverage it through the commercial bank partners. And because trade finance credits are short-term, we can then recycle the liquidity pool and seek to achieve our $50 billion goal of trade finance for over the course of the next couple years. So I'd like again to thank all our partners. I want to in particular thank a lot of the staff that have done tremendous work on that. Some of our colleagues from IFC are here today. They took a look at an issue and moved quickly to try to devise a solution and reached out to an impressive network of both public and private partners. We still have much to do. We have to execute this program, but we're already thinking ahead because we've got some ideas of trying to build on this innovative program with similar ideas in public-private infrastructure, capitalizing systemically important banks in smaller developing countries. We have a similar effort with microfinance pools to help microfinance institutions. And one that we're starting to move on is the possibility of restructuring and managing distressed assets of private companies in the developing world. So this isn't your grandparents' World Bank Group. We know that our clients face critical challenges, and we need to help them. And I thank all involved for making this a successful launch today.
Thank you, Mr. Zelig and Mr. Lamy. I would now like to invite Mr. Donald Kabaruko from the African Development Bank, also our co-host at this event, to make a few remarks.
Thank you very much. After Bob Zulik, I can afford to be very brief.
Let me say that I think this crisis will challenge all of us in three ways. One is about leadership. People prepared to take decisions, tough decisions, when it has to be taken. The second is about resources. I think the third one is how international organizations work together during this crisis. It is absolutely critical. We can either respond individually in a fragmented way, or we can come together to have maximum impact in an urgent situation. And that's the choice we have made. And I think that with IFC, with BFID, with other bilaterals, we have excellent partners. And I hope this is the beginning of a process where international organizations can work together to address a problem which is the same for all of us. I think that for us in Africa, there are three big problems where this kind of cooperation will be needed. The first one is preventing macroeconomic damage. So this is IMF, is the countries themselves, institutions which give budget support like the World Bank and ourselves, because the fund will give balance of payments, but someone has to provide money for the budget. The third one would be infrastructure. And again, I think here, together with the IFC and others, we need to continue this effort of keeping infrastructure going during the time of the crisis. Now, we're putting $500 million in this program. For a small bank like ourselves, that is quite a lot of money. To give an example of what that means, our total commitment per year to the private sector before the crisis was about $1 billion. $1 billion. It has gone up to about $1.5 billion. So we're making a deliberate choice to commit a significant part of our resources to this common program because we believe in it. We believe in it, and we shall be working with our colleagues in the IFC to ensure that we succeed. I'm keen in particular, of course, that won't surprise you, that the African countries, African banks, commercial institutions, became the prime beneficiaries of this program. And I know I share this with Bob. Now, for me, as leader of the Development Bank, there are two questions I have to ask myself. How do I balance the short-term crisis response needs and the long-term strategic needs of my continent, building infrastructure, power, and so on? But we shall come to that once the crisis is over, hopefully soon. Because when the founding fathers set up these banks, we are not supposed to do trade finance. We are instruments for long-term project finance. But we have been requested to be counter-cyclical, and we are. And I think this is a perfect example. Now, this is the wrong place to say this. As we commit all these resources to respond to the crisis, we're banks. We're banks. And want to remind sound institutions, respecting sound banking principles. And these are conversations we're having with our shareholders in different contexts. But I'm happy to commit the resources of the bank to this program, Pascal. Thank you for your leadership in this. Thank you, Bob Zulik, for the leadership on this. Thank you for the bilaterals. And I think this is the beginning of the work, which will be quite exciting.
Thank you, Mr. Kabaruka. Now, before we hear additional remarks from other program partners, I would invite Mr. Lamy, Mr. Zelik, and Mr. Kabaruka to move to the right of the stage. We'll be hearing additional remarks from four of our program partners. After your remarks, please join Mr. Lame, Mr. Zelik, and Mr. Kabaruka to the right of the stage and receive one of our commemorative GTLP plaques. Mr. Fleck.
Well, Canadians have been dependent on trade for our prosperity since before we were a country. And we're well aware of the importance of trade finance as the essential vehicle through which, in fact, the lifeblood of the dynamic, open international trading system. the financial crisis put that lifeblood of the system in danger as a result of a pullback in capital and an inability of countries to finance the necessary trade, even where the financing had previously made sense on commercial terms. So we've responded domestically by significantly increasing trade finance available in Canada, but that's clearly not enough. The crisis has had a significant impact on trade finance availability for developing countries, and that's what we're here today to begin to address, to multilaterally work together to provide trade finance for developing countries, and that's why we're delighted to be participating in the Global Trade Liquidity Facility. So I'd like to salute President Zelik on his leadership in putting this initiative together in such short order and addressing such a critical need and in helping to turn the World Bank into an institution that our grandchildren will hopefully inherit. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Fiona Scherer from UK Department for International Development.
Thank you very much. It's a real privilege to be here. And first of all, sadly, I have to make some apologies. Our Secretary of State, Douglas Alexander, and our Minister of State, Gareth Thomas, was very keen to join this launch event. Unfortunately, they have to both be in London for the launch of a new white paper, which is also significant. I think today is the day of launches, where we'll also be very visibly committing our long-term support to development. And within this, trade and growth being a really key element of that future support. I think the downturn has been a challenge for us all as donors, both in terms of the resources that we're dedicating and the challenges we face in sustaining that. And I think it's really important for us to signal that continuing commitment. The Trade Finance Initiative, I recall in November last year, some analytical work was done jointly between DFID and the World Bank Group, where we began to identify some of the challenges around trade finance. And I think it's really amazing the progress that we've made so quickly, and a real tribute to the joint working that has been mentioned by my colleagues, that we've been able to come together and really deliver on this so quickly. And I very much would echo the wish that we continue to do that in the future and we find new innovative ways of working together, both to deal with the downturn but more broadly to address some of the challenges we're talking today about aid for trade more generally. My final comment is really just about the future white paper that we will be launching, and that hopefully tomorrow we can provide a little bit more detail on what that will include. The central theme of this paper is really interdependence and how we can protect the poor and respond to the crisis. And I think one of the challenges around the Trade Finance Initiative in particular will be to make sure it really does meet the needs of those poorest countries in Africa, and that the banks really work to deliver on that in the future. So very happy to be here, and fantastic that we've all come together on this day to make this happen.
Thank you very much. Please join the gentleman to the right of the stage. Ms. Sinead Jemmett-Page from the UK CDC Group.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. CDC is delighted to be participating in the Global Trade Liquidity Programme. And the programme has been brought together remarkably quickly, given the scale and complexity of it, to provide much-needed trade finance to developing countries. And we all know business, trade and commerce are the key to helping poor countries out of poverty in the long term. So the GTLP is well aligned to CDC's mandate, which is to alleviate poverty in the developing world through investing in promising growing businesses in those countries, which in turn create employment and pay taxes. The quantum of this facility is also very meaningful, and it will make a significant difference through this difficult period. Thank you.
Thank you. Please join them. Finally, in terms of remarks, I invite Mr. Yoshihiro Kumagai from the Japan Bank for International Cooperation to make a few remarks.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your kind invitation. I heard that just I'm sitting, so I'm not prepared to speak. Anyway, thank you very much for your kind invitation. And JBIC, unfortunately, due to our legal constraints, we cannot participate this program, but with memorandum of understanding with IFC, we committed to provide a loan, $1.5 billion US dollar equivalent to trade facilitation program. And the collaboration and coordination of multi and bilateral institutions are very important. We are very pleased to collaboration with IFC and the other multi and bilateral institutions, and to we are very pleased to mitigate some trade credit insufficiency providing our parallel lending with IFC. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please join us for the rest of the stage. We're also very grateful to have other potential GTLP partners with us today. For the Netherlands Ministry of Foreign Affairs, we have Mrs. Susanna Terstel. So I'd welcome you to join us as well. For CEDA Sweden, we have Ms. Mia Horn af Rantzien. Do please join us for a photo.
Thank you.
We're also very happy to welcome representatives from the first four private sector banks to join the GTLP program. I'd like to introduce Ms. Karen Fawcett from Standard Chartered Bank. Do please join us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. David Pitts from Standard Bank. Mr. Valentino Gallo from Citigroup. And finally, Ms. Sema Zeynel-Loglu from Rabobank Netherlands. Thank you. If the audience or members of the media would like to address any questions to any of our GTLP program members, please let me know now. Yes, please, the gentleman at the back. Yes, you, sorry.
Assume that's me. Yes, Daniel Prusen with BNA. I'm sorry, I'm just looking for some more details on this first disbursement of funds. Mr. Zelik, you pointed out in your speech it's the amount of 2.5 billion U.S., and you suggested that 60% of this is being put up by public sector and 40% by private. Exactly how is this financing being provided? Those who are receiving it, they will receive it in what form? Thank you.
Well, first off, I've gone to a lot of press conferences, but Pascal has a unique attribute. He seems to have a gavel here to use. Let me just clarify a couple of the numbers that you referred to. The public sector contribution is the $2.5 billion. That doesn't include the parallel financing from JBIC of another $1.5. You take whatever public sector number, and that is about 40%. And so the commercial bank partners add on top of that about 60%. And as we grow the $2.5 billion plus/$1.5 billion, we can then multiply that for every 40 cents of that amount with 60 cents on top of it. So as I mentioned in my opening remarks, we would like to try to get the core capital from the public sector side to $4 to $5 billion. So you get $4 to $5 billion. If you get $4 billion, then you would have a $6 billion put in by the private sector side. So that's a total of $10 billion, and then you revolve that through, depending on the nature of the trade finance, every 180 to 270 days. So that's the mechanism on how it works. And what is again, intriguing about this is the combination of the public sector parties, IFC, our private sector arm, African Development Bank, the other public sector partners, but then the multiplication or leveraging through the private sector commercial banks. Then you ask, how are the allocations done? My colleagues here from IFC can give you in greater detail, but we try to work with each of the commercial bank partners, given their network. And as I mentioned, if you combine their network and the network that we had already created under our original trade finance program, we cover some 500 financial institutions in some 70 different countries. And we then try to allocate that lending pool. So a combination of money they put up and, in a sense, the corpus capital that we put up. And these original commercial bank partners are ones that we work with them based on their network. We're trying to focus particularly on Africa, but there are other developing parts of the world depending on where they have their strength. And so that's why we've been fortunate to get some early partners that will help us in sub-Saharan Africa in particular. We have other efforts through IFC to try to strengthen financial institutions in the developing world, and where we can, for example, I referenced we have another project with JBIC where we're putting about $3 billion to help capitalize systemically important banks. The first investment was in Paraguay. With each of those banks, we also try to see whether we may be able to help them with small business lending or trade finance. So the idea here is to try to expand the network.
Thank you. And as Mr. Zelik said, we have IFC and AFDB technocrats here who can answer any more detailed questions and would be happy to stay afterwards.
We call them experts.
Sorry, experts, yes. yes, please, the lady in the grey. Thank you.
Yes, Frances Williams from the Financial Times. Could you give an estimate of what you think the current financing gap is for trade finance at the moment and how that compares with when you took the decision in April at the G20 meeting to create this facility and how it compares with last November when there was a meeting here in the WTO about trade finance?
You want me to start or you want to? I wasn't quite sure I could hear it all, but it sounded like you were asking for estimates of the trade financing gap in it. At the time of the G20 meeting in London, there were various range estimates that went up to about $250 billion, my recollection was. And the London Declaration called for trying to provide that $250 billion of trade finance, of which this is some $50 billion. Of the other $200 billion, there are efforts, as Graham mentioned, with bilateral trade finance agencies to provide the different supports. So many countries have Exim banks or other types of export credit agencies. What we have found, and Graham's comments made an allusion to this, is that many of those export credit agencies in national governments were designed to do more long-term lending for projects. So they need some retooling to be used in the type of way that we're using this facility. But another aspect of our work is to see how we can leverage this work with some of the export credit agencies where their authority permits them to provide the types of liquidity financing. And that's one of the projects that Pascal helped organize at the start of this crisis. I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
I mean, the gap, as it was estimated before the London G20, was inevitably very rough. For one simple reason, which is that on this market, determining how much trade is constrained by lack of trade finance and how much of the reduction of the trade finance is triggered by trade contraction is very difficult. And it's very difficult to separate chicken and egg. So the London G20 number was based on this rough estimate. We are working hard with notably the International Chamber of Commerce on pulling the lack as seen from the business side, and we will have a better estimate in the next experts meeting, which we will hold beginning of September ahead of the Pittsburgh summit. So at this stage, I would sort of rely on the numbers we've already used, knowing that these are very rough numbers.
Thank you. I'll invite a final question. Afterwards, I would invite journalists to stay and talk to any of the participants and other colleagues in the audience for further detail. Yes, please.
In the allocation of funds, Richard Bauer from the Swiss Daily NZZ. Beg your pardon?
Sorry, could you identify your
name? Richard Bauer from the Zurich Daily NZZ. I was wondering, for the allocation of funds through this possibility, are there any tax attached to it? I mean, are you putting conditionalities where this money can be used, who can use it? If, for instance, you get a credit, you have to observe certain parameters, ecological or any other tax that would be attached to it?
I can ask if my IFC colleagues could add to it, but I think the short answer is this is just focused on trade finance. So you don't normally have ecological issues related to 180-day financing. So it's where there is an effort to allocate is with each of the commercial bank partners, depending on the amount of money they put up and the amount of capital that the public side puts up, gives you some sense of what they would be expected to finance with their network of institutions. And as I mentioned, we then complement it with our network of institutions to broaden the base of potential recipients. So there's not conditionality other than to trying to support trade finance in a way that covers all regions and makes sure that sub-Saharan Africa gets good coverage.
Thank you very much. Once again, I'd like to thank Mr. Lamy and the WTO for co-hosting this event, and thank you all very much for participating.